This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. When you walk into a particular building in downtown Raleigh, you'll be greeted by an identification constable. You'll see file cabinets that almost touch the ceiling and old wooden desks that are littered with stacks of forms and identification cards. Nope, not a new office for DOT. It is the Bureau of Personal Belongings, a series of interactive performance art installations that explore themes of belonging, identity, and validity. Visitors interact with artist and creator Stacy Kirby and other performers in three fictitious bureaucratic departments that each critically examine a different governmental process. The exhibit is hosted at Raleigh's Contemporary Art Museum through October, and we're joined by the artist and creator, Stacy Kirby, to talk about it. Stacy Kirby, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Do you call this a collection of this installation's performance interactions? What do you mean?
That means I create an installation where I invite the public to come in and participate in the artwork with me as the artist, and they become a very important part of my work. It could not stand alone without them. So that's what I mean by performative interaction.
All right, and tell us about this Bureau of Personal Belongings, for instance.
Well, the Bureau of Personal Belongings is a place where people can come in and express their voices and feel validated. They have the opportunity to fill out declarations cards talking about their personal belongings they bring with them into the space, and that could be, again, a thought or something they have in their pockets or something, you know, they're wearing. It's totally up to them. And then also they can vote and they can talk about what obstacles they overcome for voting. And then also this validation project, they can also talk about how they feel about legislation that's been passed in North Carolina in the past 2 years and be validated through that process.
Tell us about the setting and your costume. You're in costume
mm-hmm.
today,
yes.
And you look very bureaucratic.
Thank you very much. When I represent the Bureau, I must, you know, wear the proper attire.
You are there. So. And you can get links to this, of course, at our website, stateofthings.org, to see what we're talking about. But tell us about this setting and why make it look this way. What's the...
Well, when I grew up in a house with a mom who was a court reporter. She still is. And I remember her office setting, and it was kind of a 70s office setting with a bunch of stamps and typewriters, no computers yet at that point. And I just really felt this connection with my mom through her office because she was working out of her home. And so then I started building this office as a place of comfort and inviting other people to come in and interact with me in that setting. And so I've picked a 50s to 70s time period for my office where I like to have a lot of metal objects and wood objects, a lot of grounding, heavy objects in my office that people can interact with in the work.
Now, it's a feeling of home for you, but I guess for most of us, that setting is the least intimate and the least personal of all. All
mm-hmm.
those typewriters and staplers and staple removers suggest to us mm-hmm. a person on the other side who really doesn't care about
mm-hmm.
me.
Well, that is the opposite of how I am in my work. I'm extremely inviting. I'm extremely supportive. I always tell people, if you have any questions while you're filling out your paperwork, I'm here to help you, whatever you need. So I kind of flip the office environment and that bureaucratic situation, and I try to encourage people to offer their voice and offer whatever they might want to write down on the card. It's up to them.
Let me ask if you agree with this. Mm-hmm. Therein, I would say, lies the art. Because
mm-hmm.
you're fooling with my perception and forcing me to change the way I see things,
mm-hmm.
which is what good art can do.
Yeah, it does happen, and I really appreciate that. That is one of the strengths of this of the Declaration Project, definitely. I have people come in, and there are people that don't realize that they're standing in an art situation, and they think it's a real office. I mean, I think it's a real office, but and then there's a moment where the light bulb goes off that I'm asking you to interact in the actual art, and so I'm blurring that line between art and real life, kind of theater, but people are standing in the middle of it, and I really love watching that moment happen, and it happened.
Well, let's talk in the particular about
mm-hmm.
these about our belongings inventory, this
mm-hmm.
card we fill out.
Mm-hmm.
Where would we see that? that because there are cards that really happen kind of in real life. I would think in immigration.
Customs. Yeah, that's kind of where I do a lot of research into archives and paperwork, like historical paperwork and documents. And I have a design background as well from UNC Chapel Hill. And so I pull a lot of design elements from that paperwork and use that in the cards that I design. And that helps create that environment, that kind of governmental environment where people, start interacting with me.
So they fill out a form, and the question is what belongings you brought into this space, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what happens?
So basically I offer them a clipboard with the card, and then I have them read a project description, and I tell them the local declarations officer on duty that evening. And then I invite them to sit down with the clipboard and fill out the card with as much or as little information about the personal belongings they bring with them into the space. And in the project description, it says, what a personal belonging can be, a wide open definition. And then they bring the card back to me when they're done. And typically they start out with the physical presence of like what they're wearing or objects in their pockets. And then they start unpacking emotional and their own personal history, baggage. And then they just they share all this information. And it's just, I feel so honored to have them share that with me. And then I process the cards. I stamp them and emboss them with the Declarations Department symbol. And then they file it alphabetically by their last name into the card catalog, the Declarations Archive. And then they can look at other people's cards. So there's an exchange of information that happens. And I also give them a receipt and a button for participating, which is a whole other thing, a whole other level, because they get a personal belonging to take away with them in their pocket, too.
What kinds of responses have you gotten?
So I get people talking about their family issues that they're having. I get people talking about the cancer that they're struggling with. I also have a lot of political views voiced around Amendment 1, the time of Amendment 1. I had a lot of people talking about their relationships and being, deemed invalid. I can read one card if you'd like.
Yeah, please do.
Okay. So this is from April 10th, 2007, the year I started this project. And this is James Davis of Sunnyvale, California. I'm carrying the images of our grandfather's visit with us prior to the arrival here. I'm carrying the rightful images of a nation in perspective over the murder of students at Virginia Tech. I'm carrying the thought, why don't we equally grieve for the deaths elsewhere in the world, in Iraq or Sudan? So people offer some, really insightful just thoughts that they're carrying with them.
And again, therein lies the art. What's the difference? Why do you think people who would look at a form that reminds them of an immigration form or something else they may have filled out along the way, where they're just putting nouns on the page and suddenly it becomes much more subjective and intimate? What's happening in that space?
I think it's just me offering a supportive environment to connect with themselves and other people around them. And I tend to see that people come in when there are more people participating and that community is starting to happen in the space and in the work. And so I'm encouraging community, and I'm a nice presence, a supportive presence, rather than someone that doesn't like their job or is unhappy and frustrated. I'm happy to be there and I'm happy to help them.
It's interesting that you talk about that and that you set it up this way. Yesterday we had a conversation that included a discussion about Franz Kafka, who is widely sort of interpreted as a guy who predicted the horror of totalitarian states and also the kind of faceless bureaucracy and the dehumanization. And then we talked about this other critique, the idea that we imprison ourselves, that there's a built environment that you react to, but you could see it a new way. And in some ways, it seems to me your installation shines a light on that, how I can recontextualize even the worst sort of environment if I change my mind about it.
I totally agree with you. I think that is exactly what I'm doing. And it kind of came intuitive from I've worked for the state of North Carolina now for about 9 years. And so I see how people get bogged down in this mental space of feeling like they don't have a voice when actually they do. And so I'm kind of flipping it after working in such an environment and offering the opposite and empowering people.
Talk about your job with the North Carolina, with North Carolina government.
I work at the North Carolina Museum of Art and Conservation, and I work with some really wonderful people over there. And prior to that, I worked at the North Carolina Museum of History, too, and that is also a wonderful place. But so I do a lot of wonderful art-related tasks, taking care of art. But I also have to deal with bureaucracy, yeah. and getting emails that don't make a lot of sense, and feeling disconnected, and you know, and working for the state when Amendment 1 was passed, and as a queer woman, I felt really upset by that and invalidated by that. So, and having to go to work for the state after that, you know, happened. So, I'm experiencing the state as well as flipping it in my artwork and kind of reinterpreting it and presenting it in a different light and giving people a positive outlook.
In that light, talk about Valid Nation.
Mm-hmm. So Valid Nation, it came about after, well, during Amendment 1, during the campaigning for and against. And I just was really frustrated with the language that I found in the actual amendment, which most people have never even read and still voted on it and still haven't read it. So I decided to start doing a piece where I set up a portable office on the street and I set up 4 voting booths. And I'm the civil validation officer on duty. And I invite people to come up to me, and I ask them to fill out a civil validation notification card. And in this card, I ask them to fill in a box with a description of their family, their partnership, or their lifestyle. And then I also ask them to respond to recent legislation that has been passed in North Carolina in the past 2 years. And then I tell them, once you fill out this card, I will determine whether or not you're valid in the community based on what you write on the card. And just as you do, people usually laugh at me and look a little afraid and a little confused. And then they go to the voting booth and they see that I have framed the recent legislation and Amendment 1 in the voting booth. So you have some, quote unquote, inspiration for whatever you're writing in the box. And then people come back to me, bring me the card, and I look at the card and I say, so you are Frank Statio, correct? And I look at them and they say, yes. And then I read the card, and then I get out a really large valid stamp, and I ink it up in red ink, and I stamp valid on their card. And then I tear off the validation receipt, and I give it to them, and I say, congratulations, you are valid, and you get a You Are Valid sticker. And most people have the biggest smile on their faces when they're done, and I did not anticipate that. I was just doing it to call attention to the amendment and how divisive it was, and still is, I think, you know. So.
And the possibility that you might be invalid. Do you even have an invalid stamp?
No, it doesn't exist. Don't tell anyone.
Okay. Spoiler alert. We'll fix it in post. But here's the thing. You said I laughed. I laughed because I can laugh because I'm a white man. Mm-hmm. So it's funny. Ahaha. Mm-hmm. I must be valid. Are people who are not white men not quite so sanguine? Not quite so hilarious? Take it so funny?
I think that people are. The people that smile or the people that laugh, yes, they can laugh from a privileged space. But the people that smile actually feel like I'm giving them the opportunity to share their voice. And that's why they're smiling at me, you know. And so there are some people that feel that they're struggling and frustrated with what's going on. But there are also this opportunity in my work for them to share. And that's what they smile and laugh about, I think, in the end.
The most recent addition to this exhibit is something called The Power of the Ballot. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's my new work. Basically, I've been really struggling with the fact that people choose not to vote or just don't vote, whether people feel like it's a choice. And I wanted to find out from the public what obstacles they feel like they have to overcome to vote. And we know that with the gutting of the Voting Rights Act by the Supreme Court last year, you know, that's one step in the wrong direction, in my opinion. And then and also what's going on at the state level with voter ID. And, you know, but I wanted people to think about how important it is that this is the ultimate act of participation in our country is voting. So this project is basically a gigantic voting precinct. And there are precinct officers, on duty, of course. And they help you fill out a ballot and then cast your ballot about the kind of fictitious election about what obstacles you overcome to vote.
And what kind of obstacles do you see?
Well, this is what I'm getting from people thus far. Here's one card that says, or ballot, discouragement and disgust over how narrow moneyed interests have all but destroyed our democracy. I fear voting sustains illusion of democracy, but am active and vote anyway. And then another one that I've recently received is voter ID, transportation, inequality, and giving cookies when I want rights, which is a reference to our governor. So.
And then what do you do with these?
Well, now I'm going to be, when they cast their ballot, the voting precinct officer that's in the actual precinct is identifying their representative's district, and we will be sending all of these cards to the representative for the voter.
And you have some other artists that work with you on this one.
Yes. My friend and collaborator, John Watts, he's the identification constable. He's setting the tone as people come into the exhibition space, and by having conversations about identity and asking people to identify themselves, kind of riffing off the voter ID idea. And then I also have my mother, who performed on Thursday and Friday with me, and she's a court reporter, and she basically was the documentation officer, and so she documented the entire time. And she couldn't actually hear the conversations that were happening between me and the participants, but she actually was talking about what people were doing in the space and describing their facial expressions, what they were carrying. I mean, it's really kind of fascinating. She sent me a transcript yesterday, and I'm really excited about adding this to the work.
So. You have also some small hands that help you.
Yes. So this exhibition is part of the Emerging Artist Series at CAM. It's funded, supported by the City of Raleigh, which is fantastic because I grew up in Raleigh. I love that. And we have eighth grade docents at CAM, and they've been helping me. So they've been the precinct officers. Becca and Selena were my precinct officers, and they did such a fantastic job.
And how does it work? Because I guess you took a few of your voters by surprise, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we had a couple of screams, because the precinct officer, when you cast your ballot behind a closed green curtain, you know, it's kind of a surprise when they take the ballot
they
from
just
you.
Reach
and
in.
I don't want to ruin
don't
it. Another
ruin
spoiler
it. All right, all right.
You
another
have to
spoiler
come.
Alert.
You have to come.
Come and see it. It's a
yes.
lot of fun. And but so what kind of reactions have you gotten?
I've gotten a little bit of confusion, to be honest with you. There's been a little bit of confusion. I mean, some people just totally get the process. But there's been a bit of confusion. And at first I was a little worried about that. But now I'm hearing from people that that's how they actually feel when they go to vote. And it's okay to be in that confused state and that a little bit of discomfort, because you grow and learn from that, and you kind of can sit with that confusion. And I really like that. Actually, I'm confusing people a little bit. That does happen with the Declaration Project too, but the power of the ballot is a new type of confusion in terms of the voting process. And so I think talking about how voting can be confusing, how ballots have too many words on them. People have complained about having to read my ballot, and I totally understand. And think it's kind of cute that they are having a hard time reading my ballot.
Right.
That means I kind of did a good job, because ballots are confusing. So.
Yeah. Well, and out of confusion sometimes comes third and fourth ways.
There you go.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? Because if you think you know how it works and you're frustrated by it, and then you assume there are only two ways, you'll never think of that third way. So that's
exactly.
also very cool. And you're archiving as well, particularly with the belongings. Why do that?
Well, I felt like I wanted to give people a place to share and then just kind of hold on to this archive and take care of people's personal belongings that they're sharing with me. And also just have it for the future for other people to look into. And what I've found is that people come back to the project over and over again and revisit themselves within the archive a year prior. Because I do this piece usually once a year. And so there's a year between each time. And people experience themselves on a whole new light by what growth they've done or made in their lives or what changes they've made. And so I think it's a really nice thing for people and for myself to revisit.
Stacey, great to talk with you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Stacey Kirby is a performance artist, and she's talking about her new collection of performance art installations at Raleigh's Contemporary Museum of Art. Participate on view through October 26th, and you can find out more information at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, the story of four female spies during the Civil War. Stay tuned.